In its quest to provide an open forum for discussion of controversial issues, this station allows hosts and their guests to express themselves without any significant censorship. You are advised that any view expressed by the host or their guest are not necessarily the views of the owners or management of TogiNet Radio, Togi Entertainment, or the owners group.
Welcome to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com. And hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com and 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Officer Radio is your source for the latest news, trends, and issues facing the law enforcement community. Join us each week as Officer Borelli and his guest examine, dissect, and discuss the issues facing our industry. Call in live and join the conversation to get your voice heard. Now, let's get to it. It's Officer Radio, live with Frank Borelli on Officer.com.
Good day and welcome to Officer Radio, brought to you by Officer.com. I'm your host, editor for Officer.com, Frank Borelli. Today, we're going to be talking about women in law enforcement. To some extent, I believe that the involvement of women in law enforcement is viewed much the same as that of women in frontline military units. It's something that's not necessarily a traditional thought. It's not a concept we've embraced, if you will. As a man who was raised, as a man who was raised to treat women with deference, holding their chair for them, opening doors for them, and so on, I admit it's sometimes difficult to set aside what I would perceive as chivalrous behavior to respect a woman's equality in a conflict situation. I think a lot of men, especially, I mean, maybe not so much the guys under 25, under 30, and that's not an insult to them. It's just a reflection on how they've been raised, I guess. But I think those guys 30, 35 and older, we tend to still want to be protective of women. And what I've had to learn is that what I perceive as chivalrous behavior can not only be insulting to a female partner, but also detrimental to the overall officer safety circumstance in some situations. So we'll get into that on the show and a lot more. Joining us on today's show are Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith, a well-known and highly respected speaker and instructor on officer survival, especially where female officers are involved. Promoting that sexist point of view for a moment, I'd also like to point out that she's married to J.D. Buck Savage. So even as a woman warrior trainer, she still sometimes finds her role defined in relationship to a man. I guess that's the price you pay for being married to Buck Savage. Miss Karen Bartuch, who will be our second guest today. Karen's the president of the Women's Tactical Association, and we're going to talk about the growing role of women on SWAT teams and in what used to be viewed as non-traditional duties for female officers. But realistically speaking, when you look at the overall history of women in law enforcement, it's really the last probably 20 or 30 years that they've been breaking into the non-traditional duties, if you will. And SWAT teams themselves have only been around for 45, so I think they're doing an okay job on the timeline. I think they still get some resistance. Maybe they shouldn't. We'll talk about that. And our final guest will be Mr. Craig Floyd from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial. Lest we forget, the names of the fallen on the walls at the memorial are not just names of men. Female officers have made the ultimate sacrifice as well, and we need to honor them. Mr. Floyd will also be talking with us about the memorial's anniversary and some events that are coming up, and we look forward to that. Throughout the show, we'll be taking calls from our listeners. The number to dial is 866-404-6519. That's 866-404-6519. If you have a comment, question, observation, or other thought to share, please don't hesitate to dial me up. If for any reason you're uncomfortable calling, feel free to send me an email. The email address is frankborelli@officer.com. No dits, dots, dashes, or spaces, all one word. frankborelli@officer.com. Please call or send an email. Let's get some good discussion going about women and the benefits, the contributions they've made in law enforcement and the benefits that we've enjoyed from them being in law enforcement. And there are some very specific ones we'll talk about probably prior to our first guest. Today's show, like all of them, will be archived on the Officer.com radio page as well as our podcast page. To find it for reference or for future listening, just go to Officer.com. On the top navigation bar, click on the Media Center. On the Media Center page, on the blue navigation bar, which is our second bar, click the link for Officer.com radio, or right next to it, the one for our podcast library. You might want to bookmark that page as a good reference for the future. We discuss about training issues and other options, other topics. It might serve as good reference material. At least we hope so. Yeah, I'm that arrogant. Any of y'all who know me know that's true. The archive shows are also available on iTunes, so you can search us out there to download them. Hopefully, as you know, hopefully you know, Officer.com has both a Facebook fan page and a Twitter feed. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We return the favor. And not only do we appreciate the interaction, but it allows us to serve your information needs better. So with all that administrative stuff out of the way, let's get into the meat of the show about women in law enforcement. In April of this year, one of our regular columnists, a gentleman named Charles Bennett, who writes our legendary Lawmen column, I guess we should change the title to Legendary Law Persons, actually wrote an article about the First Lady of Law Enforcement. And I was kind of surprised. I had to learn something new. You know, women being involved in and around law enforcement wasn't unique. I mean, it was going on in the 19th century. By the mid-1800s, most police departments in the United States, anyway, had police matrons in their employ. They weren't what we would consider to be police officers today in that they didn't carry weapons, they didn't have arrest powers, but they were instrumental in leading the way for today's women that do wear a badge. So with that background, who was actually the first sworn law enforcement female? According to Mr. Bennett, on April 1st, 1908, really, it's not a joke, no April Fool's Day things going on there. April 1st, 1908, the city of Portland, Oregon appointed Lola Baldwin, who was 48 years old at the time, as a sworn female detective to protect and serve. She actually had to take a test. What they referred to as a specialized female detective civil service exam, and it was specialized female detective because she was the first. Nobody had ever taken that test before. And after passing it, becoming a detective, she served 14 years as the first policewoman with powers of arrest. She apparently let people know she viewed her role more as crime prevention than enforcement. But hey, you know, 1908, that's over 100 years ago, 103 years ago. That's not bad. It's not bad. In September of 1910, 2 years after Miss Baldwin's appointment, a woman named Alice Stebbins Wells was selected in Los Angeles and assigned to their juvenile bureau, 37 years old at the time. She was actually an assistant pastor. How odd was that 100 years ago to have a female pastor and a licensed social worker with 2 college degrees, which makes her more educated than a lot of people I know, book smart anyway. She was appointed after the city council decreed an ordinance providing for one police officer who should be a female, very forward thinking of Los Angeles on her part. So September 1910, we have a Los Angeles police officer. And I think L.A. might have had a ulterior motive. Subsequent to Officer Wells' appointment, the LAPD issued this following statement, or this following order, I should say. No young girl can be questioned by a male officer. Such work is delegated solely to police women who, by their womanly sympathy and intuition, are able to gain the confidence of their younger sisters. Wow, isn't that a politically correct way 100 years ago of saying women can talk to girls better than men can talk to girls? And the read between the lines part for me is, and they can see through the BS a little bit better. You know, I freely admit it is a fault that some men have, that if there's an attractive woman talking to them, their filter for BS might not be turned on quite as high. Women don't have that problem. It reminds me of the scene in the movie, the remake of The Dukes of Hazzard, where Daisy Duke is trying to get this whole cluster of men to follow her, and they're all about it. They're like, yes, ma'am, let's go. We'll follow you anywhere, until the female officer steps up and says, no, what are you guys thinking? Well, they weren't thinking, and that's the reality sometimes. So women have been involved in law enforcement for over 100 years. In the late 80s, I knew a female officer on a neighboring municipal jurisdiction where I worked who had every desire to be a full-time SWAT officer. And I know a lot of people told her she couldn't. Her sergeant at the time stepped up and said, I can't think of any good reason why not. And he sent her to SWAT school. To the best of my knowledge, that young lady now, well, young lady to me because she's still younger than I am, she's already done 25 years in law enforcement, so I think that some of our newer officers would have a hard time referring to her as young lady. But as to the best of my knowledge now, she has spent the last 15 to 20 years on a full-time SWAT team working for a larger city than the one that originally sent her to the school. You know, I think that speaks volumes for somebody who has the drive and the desire to do it. My own daughter, my second daughter, has recently expressed an interest in going into law enforcement and does not hide the fact that she wants to work her way into special weapons and tactics. She wants to be a SWAT cop. There have been people who have tried to talk her out of it. There have been people tried to tell her girls shouldn't do that and women shouldn't do that. You know, and she politely looks at them, thanks them there for their opinion, tells them she'll take it under consideration, give it all due weight that it deserves, and then files it in the circular mental basket and ignores them. You know, she believes she can do pretty much anything she wants to do if she sets her mind to it, and we've always tried to support that outlook. And it takes that kind of outlook. I'm not singing the praises of my daughter specifically, but there have been a lot of women in history in law enforcement who have had to break that glass ceiling, if you will. They've had to step up and say, hey, I can do this, and ignored the people or figuratively fought with the people who have said, no, you can't. But here we find ourselves today with you know, a woman who's going to be on, Ms. Karen Bartuch, she's going to be on with us, who's the president of the Women's Tactical Association. And I think it speaks volumes that there's enough women in law enforcement that it justifies having a women's tactical association, a women's tactical association. Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith, who is so popular and so well known nationwide, and she's finished her career. I mean, she's retired as a sergeant. So she's already done more than two decades in law enforcement. I think that speaks volumes of her. And we're going to talk to Craig Floyd again and speak about the women who've made the ultimate sacrifice. They deserve to be remembered just as much as the men, even though their numbers might be smaller. So all that's coming back. After our first break, we're going to have Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith on, and we'll get into this topic. Thank you for listening.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. In May of 2011, a small brown-eyed boy proudly showed off the law enforcement buttons he had pinned to his shirt in honor of his dad, an officer killed in the line of duty 6 years ago. Then the reality set in. This boy was just a few days away from his sixth birthday. He never got the chance to meet his dad, nor did thousands of children whose parents' names are forever etched into the living memorial in Judiciary Square. Join us in 2012 as we launch Officer World Expo in Washington, D.C. in our effort to reduce the intolerably large number of officers who didn't get to go home to their families. OfficerWorldExpo.com, because some records aren't meant to be broken.
Girlfriend It is on TogiNet, Thursdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Central, with your hosts Patty Wyatt and Lisa Jernigan. This show is your chance to share, learn, laugh, and connect with other women. The Girlfriend It principle was born out of loss.
Lisa had recently had her mother pass away from cancer, and my mom was murdered. A man just walking into a room and started a 23-second shooting spree.
I think one of the things we both realized going through those tragedies that you can be extremely okay and be extremely sad.
Check out GirlfriendIt.com and then be a part of Girlfriend It, the radio show, Thursdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Central.
You know, your boyfriend or your husband or whatever, they don't totally understand that emotional side to a woman like another woman does. And I think that's so important, just to have somebody that you go, she gets me.
Check out the website, girlfriendit.com. Don't miss Girlfriend It with Patty Wyatt and Lisa Jernigan, Thursdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Hello and welcome back to Officer Radio on Officer.com. Let me remind you, we have an 800 number you can call in, 866-404-6519, if you have any comments, concerns, questions, thoughts to share, or observations to make. Welcome back to our show today about women in law enforcement. We are joined by Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith, who you will hear me refer to as Betsy, because I'm quite honored that she's a friend of mine, and I get to have that privilege of not having to use her title, Sergeant. How are you doing today, Betsy?
I'm great, Frank, and thanks for inviting me to be on the show. I'm excited.
Well, you know, I'm glad you can get excited about it. After you spend 10 or 12 hours setting up the show, it's hard to get as excited about, but we're really glad to have you here. Hey, listen, right before we went to break, I had mentioned that we were going to have you on, and I referenced your career spanning more than a couple of decades. How long were you an active law enforcement officer before you retired?
I was an active law enforcement officer for 29 years. I actually started out as a police dispatcher as a senior in high school, dispatched all through college, and then at age 21 became a cop and spent 29 years doing a variety of assignments. I was really fortunate that I got to do just about everything I wanted to do in law enforcement and retired 2 years ago as a sergeant.
What didn't you get to do that you wanted to do?
I ran our canine unit, but I did not get to handle my own dog. And other than that, that's really about it. I worked in narcotics. I worked in almost every spot in investigations. I ran the crime prevention unit, I ran animal control. Worked in the honor guard, and probably without a doubt, the most fun I had, other than narcotics, because that's always a lot of fun, but was being a patrol sergeant. That really is the best job on almost any agency, and I chose to finish out the last six years of my career running a patrol team. Just good times.
Let's be clear here. Working narcotics undercover is not a lot of fun. For the wrong reasons, it's a lot of fun because you get to have such a great impact and lock up the bad guys, right?
Absolutely. And it was, I was undercover in the 80s for folks who remember that era of cocaine prior to or just the beginning of crack. And in 1980, in my era, I worked in the Chicago metropolitan area on a statewide task force. There weren't any women. And I was young. I looked even younger. And I grew up on a farm, knew nothing about drugs. I grew up a really sheltered kid. But in the 80s, they'd sell just about anything to a young woman. And that was a great experience for me. And I learned so much about, tactics and the court system and report writing. It was an outstanding experience for me.
But in being specific, because we're talking about the role of women in law enforcement, the fact that you were a woman, a young woman, made you all the more or all the less suspicious, I guess, to the drug dealers. I mean, they just didn't think there was any way you could be a cop.
Absolutely. And that's the thing is we need to take advantage of our gender in situations like that. And a lot of people would say back then, oh, yeah, she's only a narc because she was a woman. And you know what? I'm sure that's why they selected me, because I was a young woman. I looked young enough to go into the high schools. I could change my appearance easily. That's a lot harder for guys. So was I selected primarily because I was a woman? You betcha. But was I good because I was a good cop? That's why I was good. And that's what we need to do as women, is learn to take advantage of the gifts that we have and then use those to really excel.
Well, and obviously some women do, some women don't. I'd also accompany that statement by saying some men do and some men don't. So it's not a comment on gender. It's a comment on capability, motivation, and drive. Do you still see situations where women who are highly capable, highly competent, highly driven still get held back in our nation in your travels?
Yeah, you know, I teach in 49 out of 50 states. I travel internationally. I've taught in the Middle East. I've taught in the Balkans. I've taught in Canada. And, yeah, unfortunately, we do see women that, in fact, we're seeing kind of a backslide right now in this current economy and in the current situation. You know, women made a lot of strides in law enforcement. We're seeing a bit of a backslide as far as recruiting women and retaining them. And I talk to women all over the country, and it's a frustration. But what we need to do with that is we need to take a look at it and say, okay, A, how do we need to educate these women to make themselves the absolute best that they can be? B, how do we educate the men in our profession so that, you know, it is a more friendly workplace for women? And, you know, and B, how do we all move forward as a profession? Because it's not about making women victims, and it's not about making allowances for women. And I think that that's a big misunderstanding in so many male-dominated professions. Oh, we got to make allowances for women. No, we don't. Women are strong and capable, and police work is a great profession for so many women, but we've got to match those women that are capable with the profession and with the particular agency.
You know, I'm really glad to hear you say that, though. I think it's funny, and you see movies, and I've in the preface to the show, I wrote about this, G.I. Jane, there was the gender norming where she got to use a step when the men didn't, and, right. And had to do less push-ups, and then the men, and like, my daughter, who's 21 years old, is trying to get into law enforcement, and she went and took her first PT test, and she came to me afterwards, she said, Dad, she said, I have two problems. I said, okay, what are the problems? She says, number one, the test was too easy overall. Far too easy overall. Mm-hmm. Anybody out of shape at you know, 50 ought to be able to do this. I went, okay, that's number one. What's number two? She says, the standards for the women were different.
Right.
She goes, it's the same job. Why shouldn't I have to do what they can do? She goes, that's insulting to me that there's different standards. And I was like, well, you know, welcome to the world of still developing to recognize equality. But and I'll go back to something I said before the show started. I was raised to be chivalrous, hold doors, hold chairs, not curse in front of a lady, things like that. How do we balance that? How do we keep the gentlemanly, chivalrous behavior as a good thing, but not cross that line and treat women unfairly at the same time?
Well, you know, there is nothing wrong with chivalry, and I get frustrated, and I've been seeing this for 30 years where women would get all insulted when a man would open a door for them. That's ridiculous. I don't expect a guy to open a door for me, but when he does, you know, I say thank you, and you know what? If I have the chance to open a door for a guy, I'll do the same thing. You know what it's about? It's about being part of a polite society. It's about being kind to each other. Here's the thing. Law enforcement needs to look at the military. When the military changed its standards to accommodate women, every branch of the military changed except one, and that was the United States Marines. And you look at women in the United States Marines, and those women have the same standards, and they do the same jobs, and the Marines, you know, move forward that situation. That's what law enforcement needs to do. We need to not lessen standards. And women need to understand that, you know what? Because I've had a lot of women say, does this mean I have to be better, stronger, faster than the men? You know what? Yeah, that's what it means. You know, do I have to prove myself? Yep, got to prove yourself. And
but when does that stop, though? When do we – I'm sorry for cutting you off, but Betsy, when does that stop? When do we just say, cool, we're, you know – We're equals. We have to perform equally.
Well, we do have to perform equally, and we, you know, but we can't make. Here's what we end up doing: we make allowances for women, and that makes them victims. We don't want to make women victims. We want to make them warriors. Let me give you an example. We, you know, and I'm sure you've been through this. I've been through it. Every cop has to go through what we like to call sensitivity camp, cultural diversity awareness training, sexual harassment awareness training, and a lot. And I used to do that training a lot, and you know, conduct it. And a lot of that training was teaching men how to make allowances for women in the workplace, teaching them how women think, how women deal with things, all of that. That's all well and fine, but I guarantee you there's not a single woman, unless they've been to one of my classes, listening to this, who has been to a class to learn how men think, to learn how to work with men, to learn how to manage men. I supervise men. I can't supervise a man in the same way that I supervise a woman. I need to understand how men think. Men and women think differently. Now, it's a big shock, but it's the reality of the situation. So we have to learn about each other. We're a family. We're a brotherhood. We are brothers and sisters, and we got to admit we're different, learn how to deal with each other, and then learn how to take advantage of each other's strengths and help each other compensate for any perceived weaknesses. The best team out there is a man and a woman fighting crime.
And I would agree with you 100%, but I've got to admit to you, when, just so you know, I got my two-minute warning till our next break, so that's our time limit. But I've worked the street with a partner who is 6'4", 315 pounds. And no, it wasn't a woman, and that had been a really big lady. But I liked having him for backup. I felt much more confident in conflict situations. I've worked with a woman who was 5'1", 105 pounds, with her body armor and gun belt on, and it wasn't the same level of confidence. That's not speaking to gender. That's speaking to pure awesome physical force and size. How do we overcome millennia of prejudices that we've learned?
We have to teach women and the people who train them what their natural advantages are. I'm a small woman like that. Now, am I physically fit? Can I fight? You're damn right I can. But I can also talk. I can communicate. I can read people. And we have to understand that big guy that you had as backup, well, I like working with a guy like that too. But you know what? I can step forward, read the scene, possibly talk to the bad guy that we're dealing with. And you know what? And most women will tell you this. They can talk a guy into handcuffs and into that back of that squad car without ever barely laying hands on him, because that's a gift that most women have. We've got to be ready to fight, but very often we don't have to. And that has to do with science, with brain function, with physiology, all those things that we need to understand, all those things that I talk about in the classes that I teach around the country and around the world.
Betsy, and we're going to have to end on that note because we're running out of time. You do teach classes all around the country and the world. You have a website called femaleforces.com. I want to thank you for being on the show today. We got to have you back because we could do an hour-long show on this.
So hey, absolutely. I appreciate the chance, Frank, and I look forward to coming back.
All right. Stay safe. And listeners, we'll be back after the break with Ms. Karen Bartuch.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these. It's time to get your boots on with the Boot Campaign with hosts Megan Roth and Bailey Gray, Thursdays at noon, 1 Central on TogiNet.com, sponsored by Austin Bank. The whole point of the Boot Campaign is to continue the true grassroots initiative developed by a group of patriotic women known as the Boot Girls. Inspired by the true story of Marcus Luttrell, the lone survivor, the Boot Girls got started with celebrities but want every American to get your boots on by purchasing a pair of the Give Back Combat Boots. The campaign's motto is simple. When they come back, we give back. For more on the Boot Campaign, go to the website, bootcampaign.com. The Boot Campaign Get Your Boots On show will feature discussions on current events impacting the lives of active duty and retired military, interviews with our nation's war heroes, medical professionals, and celebrities who have put their boots on. Do your part and join us for The Boot Campaign Get Your Boots On show with Megan Roth and Bailey Gray, Thursdays at noon, 1 p.m. Central on TogiNet.com.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. Join thousands of other law enforcement professionals attending Police Week, May 12th through the 17th, 2012, in Washington, D.C. The new Officer World Expo at Police Week will offer training, conference sessions, and networking opportunities to better equip those who protect others. Visit OfficerWorldExpo.com because some records aren't meant to be broken.
Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Morelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Good day and welcome back to Officer Radio on Officer.com. We just had a fantastic segment with Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith, married to J.D. Buck Savage and running FemaleForces.com. We appreciate her being on the show. And now we are joined by Ms. Karen Bartuch, who is the president of the Women's Tactical Association. I met Karen at the National Tactical Officers Association conference, was surprised to see the booth, introduced myself, handed her a card, and invited her to the show, and thankfully she agreed. So she's with us today. How are you doing, Karen?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
It's my pleasure. You know, it's much easier to fill an hour of babbling if I have people to babble with me. So I'm inviting you to my babble fest. Listen, I was just talking to Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith about women in law enforcement. And then in the opening of the show, I talked about how women have been involved in law enforcement now for over 100 years. Some people might think that women in tactical roles is a relatively new thing, but I knew a woman, as much as I hate to admit it, more than 20 years ago, who was becoming a full-time SWAT officer. Can you tell us when are you aware? Let me see if I can get a coherent question out. The role of a woman in a SWAT position, can you cite when that was in the United States? Is there a way for us to know?
You know, I don't have specifics on that, but I do get emails a lot from retired females who were in tactical roles. So, I mean, it's at least 30 plus years we're talking. I just think that women have been in law enforcement for 100 years, but the next hurdle that we kind of have to get past is getting more women involved in the tactical community.
Okay, but now I understand that the Women's Tactical Association doesn't specifically focus on women who are in what we would call tactical roles, but it's more of a training organization, a professional organization for women to be more mindful of officer survival and tactical awareness in general. Is that correct?
That's correct, because I really feel no matter where or what role you're playing on your police department, you need to have specialized training. I mean, folks here in the city of Chicago, patrol is going to be the first one that responds. So I think it's really important to have all of our people trained up in specialized training rather than just our SWAT team.
And we would be in 100% agreement there.
We have gals assigned to all different roles, detective, canine. We do have gals on SWAT teams, et cetera. So.
The Sarge mentioned, back in the day, having a young woman in a narcotics undercover role was unheard of, so it made her particularly successful in that. I can't imagine the surprise that some chauvinists, myself included there, unfortunately, would have to have if they saw women completely unexpected in a role that they didn't – you just don't think of a woman that way. But when you take the step, it's a police officer, you take the step, it's a SWAT cop, okay. That's who she is. That's what she does. I guess we just have to learn to live with it to some extent.
Right.
Let me ask.
We don't advocate for any different standards, male or female. So if, you know, you can pass the tryouts, then people shouldn't really have any issue with who's on the SWAT team, whether it's male or female.
I agree with you. If you can meet the standards, you can do the job. And
right.
Gender shouldn't play a role. But there are some long-held prejudices that exist there. As we discussed earlier, let me ask you something, because we're talking about standards, and I mentioned the movie G.I. Jane earlier. The movie SWAT had what was the actress's name? I can't remember off the top of my head, who got recruited for SWAT and had to meet all the same standards and do all the same training. Is Hollywood, because so much of it comes through our mainstream media, television's a big part, movies, is Hollywood helping or hurting the growing role of women in law enforcement? Your opinion.
My opinion, I think it helps. I mean, Angelina Jolie is pretty believable as, an assassin or toting a gun around. So I think it helps because it shows that it is possible, whether there's an element of fantasy to it or not. I think that it's helping change those long-standing prejudices that you mentioned earlier. So I think it definitely helps. I mean, I get jacked up when I see Michelle Rodriguez on the SWAT team in that movie. Even though it's a little corny, I still like to see that. So I think it's definitely helping.
But it shows a strength, at least for the sake of the script, because what was the question? How many men can we fit through that opening? And
right.
Colin Farrell says, men? None. But when you have another option, it's a good thing.
I think so for sure. And, we hold more cards. People tend to underestimate us a little bit. So especially in things like undercover capacity, that tends to help us out. And I think on a SWAT team, it can too, because you need not only the big, beefy guys. You also need people that can think critically. And like Betsy was saying, that can talk to people.
That's true. And you don't have a choice. I mean, if your choice every time is fight or talk, I'd rather fight. I'd rather talk. I started to say I'd rather fight just because I haven't been in one in a long time. I'd rather talk. And most cops I know, if they're any good with talking, they can convince people. They could talk somebody into going to hell and have them believing they were getting a Bermuda vacation. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. I think definitely a big part of law enforcement is people skills, for sure. But there are those one percenters on the street that don't care who's talking to them or what they're saying, that they just want to do harm to people, civilians or cops. I mean, we've seen an increase in ambushes in the last couple of years. So no matter where you are, you got to be prepared.
Yeah, that's a true statement. Well, let me ask you this. Obviously, though, there are some physiological differences between men and women that affect certain basic performance issues, strength-based issues, like particularly. Have you seen that present much of a hurdle or an impediment to women breaking into tactical roles?
I have not. You know, there's standards for a reason, and they are rigorous. They're looking for the best of the best, and it just takes some effort. For instance, our SWAT trials require 40 push-ups in a minute. That's something that I have to work at, but also firearms, that's something that I also have to work out. It's a perishable skill, and it's something that you have to stay current on. So, you know, I'm okay with those standards. I'm not convinced that, you know, having to do 40 push-ups really is that crucial to your to how you're going to perform on your SWAT team, but there are standards for a reason, and I get them, and I would never want any different standards, male or female. So it just takes effort, and if you're committed to it, and SWAT is definitely, you know, a career-long commitment. It's not just something you're going to do for 1 or 2 years. I think it's okay to have those standards.
And I appreciate the standards. I like that you admit that you have to work at it to meet that standard. And I'll make two comments. One, you're absolutely right. I don't know that being able to do a set number of push-ups in a set time frame really reflects how well you can do a job, because I've never ever seen anybody win a fight by doing push-ups.
Right.
Nobody ever's been put in handcuffs for me doing sit-ups, and I've never had to run more than a couple hundred yards chasing someone. Thankfully, I've never had to run at all being chased by someone. So the standards, they might not make sense, but they're necessary to measure strength, to measure cardiovascular fitness, to measure things like that. The shooting skills are obviously a higher standard, and I respect them for that. I wonder, you know, there's a big push now for physical fitness standards, testing standards that are more job performance oriented and less specific strength oriented. I wonder if it would be possible to develop a test like that was gender neutral. Do you think that we could?
Yeah, I think so, because you could do things like sprint or more functional fitness type things, carrying heavy objects like you see in CrossFit type workouts. I think it's definitely possible to do something that's more realistic. I think our power test standards, they're decades old, and they could definitely use some updating. But I think that's pretty true across the country.
And we would be in agreement. But now, like I said, I knew a woman in 1988-89 who became a full-time SWAT officer. She ran into some grief at first. Her chief said, "You're out of your mind. You're a woman." And her sergeant said, "I'll send you to the school." And she went and passed it. And the sergeant went to the chief and before he sent her and said, "Look, if she passes it, then what argument do we have?" He was open-minded enough to do that. That was more than 20 years ago. But let's keep in mind, SWAT's only been around for 45 years.
Right.
So, with women in law enforcement 100 years, actually more than 100 years, SWAT only around 45. If we've had women in SWAT better than 20, are we really seeing a gender-based impediment, or are we seeing, and I'm not making an accusation, are we seeing a lack of motivation on the part of some of those female officers to get involved with something that's not traditionally a role they would be in?
I would say it's a little bit of both, and I wouldn't say that it's a lack of ambition on women's part. I think, like, for me, the first 5 years of my career, I was sort of in the dark that this whole tactical community existed, and that's kind of shame on me for that. But once I delved into it and saw what was going on and all of the phenomenal training that's available, I mean, granted, I'd have to go on my own time and my own money. I just fell in love with what was out there and kind of felt like it was my mission to make it more available, more mainstream to every officer, male and female. So I think it's a little bit of both, and I kind of feel like that's the WTA's job right now, is to change that mindset. I think a lot of officers, you know, they're busy with family and other things that they have to do on the weekends and that. So if we could make training a little more available, a little more affordable, it's a lot more attractive to people that have busy lives in general.
And, you know, whether I'm busy or not, more affordable makes it more attractive to me. Free is rocking.
No kidding. And, you know, ammo's not getting any cheaper these days. And we, like I said, all of us are going on our own time. We're taking vacation from work to go do this time away from our families. So, and it's definitely something you have to be committed to, you know, as part of your profession. You know, my brother is on a SWAT team in the south suburbs over here, and he always says barbers have to go every year for some extra training, but law enforcement don't.
I can't speak to your state. I'm in Maryland, and we're required to have a certain amount of in-service training every year. And our SWAT guys, at least I know my local guys, they train every week. They used to be a part-time team, and they had some really interesting challenges that I won't go into because I don't want to give them additional headaches by telling the world what's going on here. But, you know, they used to only be able to train every other week. And they were a part-time team, and then they became a full-time team, and they train at least one day a week, if not more than that. And they're quite honestly one of the most competent teams I know of. And at this point, I will, because I'm bragging about them, say this is the Calvert County Sheriff's Office Special Operations Team, one of the most competent emergency services teams I've ever seen teach or operate. How much training is enough? And we're at our two-minute warning, so I'll throw that out there for you. But how much training is enough? If you're going to be a full-time SWAT operator, how often, how much? What's your recommendation? What's your thought?
Physical fitness, obviously, that's something you have to work with. I would say minimum 4 to 5 times a week you need to be working out and doing cardio and some sort of strength training. And firearms, I mean, that's really up to the individual. I know that I need to go more often than probably most just to keep up my skills. But I would say at least 2 times a month, and I would say that most officers don't even see that. So that's why we try to make our range dates really consistent and, like I said, free most of the time. But you know, it's really up to the individual. They need to know their capabilities and what they can and can't do.
Very true. And sometimes we have trouble being honest with ourselves. It's like the Toby Keith song.
Right.
You know, I'm not as – was it my body says, you can't do that. My pride says, oh, yes, I can. I'm closer to 50 than 40, and I know there's some things that just plain and simple hurt me to do anymore. Should there be – wow, now we're at 30 seconds. Should there be an age limit, in your opinion? On SWAT operators?
I don't. I definitely don't. If you could perform, then you're good to go.
Okay. So as long as you maintain. Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
I hate to cut you off. That's Karen Bartuch of the Women's Tactical Association. And if you go to their website, you can get more about them, womenstactical.org. We'll be back after the break.
Thank you.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. 152. The number of law enforcement fatalities in 2010. The numbers are too high. Any line of duty death is unacceptable. Join us in Washington, D.C. next year during National Police Week at the first ever Officer World Expo as we combine a unique training opportunity with the largest police memorial in the United States. Visit OfficerWorldExpo.com for details and to join the mailing list. Officer World Expo, because some records aren't meant to be broken.
It's time to capture the simple peace of the Amish in your own life. Amish Wisdom with Suzanne Woods Fisher. Thursday afternoons at 5, 4 Central. Each week, Suzanne will have conversations with guests about living a life that incorporates principles of the Amish without going Amish. She'll cover the practical, simplicity, slowing down, reducing clutter, putting the brakes on materialism. The historical, how have the Amish survived for 400 years? How can we hold on to what we hold dear? And the spiritual, treasuring important values, honoring the past, and increasing peace of mind. You don't have to become Amish to make personal peace a reality. Amish Wisdom will help all of us live a simpler life. For more information, go to SuzanneWoodsFisher.com. With Amish Wisdom, Suzanne offers us a glimpse into a world of peace, serenity, and total commitment to family and God. This show just might change the way you live your life. It's Amish Wisdom with Suzanne Woods Fisher. Thursday afternoons at 5, 4 Central on TogiNet.com.
Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli.
Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Folks, welcome back. We've been enjoying the show today, talking about women in law enforcement. I'd like to remind you that we'll take your calls at 866-404-6519 if you have a comment or thought you'd like to share. Now we come back to the show with Mr. Craig Floyd, the chairman and CEO of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, the people who are dedicated and so motivated about maintaining the Law Enforcement Memorial in Judiciary Square in Washington, D.C. It's always a pleasure to have Mr. Floyd on the show. And how are you doing today, sir?
Doing great, Frank. Thanks for having me back.
It's a pleasure. You know, today we're talking about women in law enforcement, and I can't help but think, with over 19,000 names on that wall, some of them have got to be those of women officers who have made the ultimate sacrifice.
Well, without question, when we talk about women in policing, you know, I think back to Alice Stebbins Wells, recognized by many as the first female officer with arrest powers. That was for the Los Angeles Police Department back in 1910.
Yep.
And when you look at the first female with arrest powers, you think, well, right away, we must have just lost thousands of female officers over the years. Actually, the number is much smaller than that, 247 female officers on the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial, most of them since 1970. There were only 9 female officers killed in the line of duty prior to 1970. In fact, the first one was a matron, a jail matron for the Hamilton County, Ohio Sheriff's Office. That's the Cincinnati area. And she was actually struck over the head with a metal bedpost, and it was an escape attempt, and she was the first female officer killed in the line of duty in 1916. And what we've seen, Frank, I think more than anything, those numbers reflect the fact that while, yes, there were women in law enforcement much further back in our history, a lot of times they did not have the street patrol duties that so many officers do today. Today we find female officers facing the same risks, the same demanding tasks that the male counterparts do, and as a result, many, many more female officers have been killed in the line of duty over just the last couple of decades. This year already, in 2011, we've lost 10 female officers in the line of duty.
Wow, you know, and I was getting ready to ask you, do you see a correlation in the number of women involved in law enforcement being reflected in the number of women dying in law enforcement? It's a sad truth that I guess you guys, that kind of get slapped in the face with that at the memorial when you document their sacrifice and put the names on the wall.
Well, I think you're exactly right. Now, what we're seeing in law enforcement trends is the number of female officers, or at least the percentage of female officers serving today, is roughly the same as it was, you know, say 10 years ago. About 12 to 14% of all the officers in the United States are females. That puts the number right around 90 to 100,000 female officers serving in the United States. And as we just pointed out, those female officers are facing the same risks as their male counterparts. So what you're going to find is that about that same percentage are being killed in the line of duty. The year with the most deaths of any for female officers actually was 2002. We lost 15 female officers in 2002. And in recent years, those numbers have been tracking right around to that much higher figure than we saw earlier in history.
Mm. And I know I'm a sexist pig because I feel the loss of a female officer like it's a greater sacrifice than that of a male officer. And I attribute that to my upbringing and my background. But, you know, I think it's difficult as a male to not look at a fallen female and worry about the husband, the children. We still tend to see them more in the matronly role than as a professional law enforcement officer, unfortunately. Is there anything that you guys do different if it's of a fallen female, fallen male, or does a memorial treat everybody the same?
No, absolutely. Every officer is treated equally. Makes no difference, rank, sex, ethnicity, you name it. You know, our officers who make the ultimate sacrifice receive the exact same honor. You know, hearing you talk there, I was reminded of a female officer who was killed on 9/11. There were actually two female officers killed that day, Kathy Mazza, who worked for the Port Authority Police Department of New York and New Jersey, the highest-ranking female officer killed that day, and Moira Smith, who was a New York City police officer, died on 9/11. There was just a very poignant photograph of Moira helping a innocent person out of the burning towers at the World Trade Center on 9/11, and the person was bleeding and looked very scared, and Moira was there giving aid. Moments after that picture was taken, she rushed back in to save more victims, and unfortunately the towers collapsed and Moira Smith was killed. 1 year later, in May of the following year, 2002, we invited her husband, I think his name was James Smith, to the memorial to see his wife's name inscribed on the memorial walls. And after the name was inscribed, he went over in a very touching moment and placed a photograph of his young 2-year-old daughter, of him and Moira, on the wall, and touched us all to know that, yes, that child, who's now 12 years old, I believe, is growing up without her mom, and that's tough, and that was tough to see that day.
And you know, I freely admit my own sexist outlook. Why is it any worse for a child to grow up without a mother than without a father who's been a police officer who makes that ultimate sacrifice? I think it's probably an educational step that we have to take in promoting the equality and the appreciation of the job that's done and the sacrifices that are made.
It's also a reflection, I think, of our view of parenthood. Speaking as a father myself, who has a wonderful wife at home, not only working but also taking care of the family in the home, I think, as much as I'd like to think I have done my share with my kids, I still think so much of it falls on the shoulders of our wives and the mothers of these children. And, God bless mothers. Kids growing up without one is probably about as tough as it gets, and unfortunately the 247 names on the memorial remind us that there's a lot of kids out there that don't have that mother at home with them.
Indeed. And it's good to know that you work hard to make sure that every officer that falls is treated equally, no matter race, gender, whatever. I used to tell everybody, when I look at a cop, I don't see a color, I see blue, and it's just how we all are. It's always been my outlook. Listen, I know you guys have some stuff coming up, the memorial. Before that, thank you very much for the information about women in law enforcement. The numbers actually were lower than I expected and higher than I'd ever like to hear. Going on, the idea that one death is too many. So we appreciate that. But the memorial has an anniversary coming up and some events that are going on around that. Can you share that information with us?
Yeah, absolutely, Frank. We are commemorating the 20th anniversary of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorials. We dedicated the memorial on October 15th of 1991. It is 20 years old this month, and on October 12th, next Wednesday, we'll be having a gala celebration here in Washington, D.C. at the Grand Hyatt Hotel, just a few blocks from the memorial, and we expect to have 500 or more celebrants with us to enjoy that milestone moment, and many of those folks will be people that have close ties to the memorial and to our organization, friends, survivors of officers killed in the line of duty, and so many of the law enforcement leaders will be with us that night. This is a time to reflect, I think, on the fact that before 20 years ago, we didn't have a national monument, a national memorial honoring the men and women who serve in law enforcement in this country and those who sacrificed their lives. But ever since that memorial was dedicated, I think the American people have gotten a much better glimpse at the level of service, the level of sacrifice that our law enforcement professionals give this nation. We have honored them properly through this national monument. As you know, we're in the process of building a national law enforcement museum right across the street from the memorial. and certainly that museum will tell the story of every one of those 19,298 names on the memorial walls, and of course tell the stories of women in law enforcement, and certainly the 247 female officers who've died in the line of duty.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to the memorial. The museum. On the 12th, you may actually see me in a suit. I'm supposed to be there. Barring any unforeseen circumstance, this face that's been declared as perfect for radio, and I take that as the left-handed compliment as it is, will be in a suit and attending the event and honored to be there. And I really do look forward to the museum opening. I know there's some really interesting exhibits that you have already collected. Some of the J. Edgar Hoover's items were supposed to be there, and there's some virtual tours that are available. Are there not?
Absolutely. Anyone that is interested in seeing the collection, we have more than 15,000 artifacts now in our storage facility for the museum, and we do have selected tours that are available for folks that might be interested in doing that. So certainly if they wanted to see the collection, they can contact us at 202-737-3400, and that's the phone number here at the Memorial Fund offices. So if they want to learn more about the museum, the memorial, the collections, they can go to our website. We have one for the Memorial Fund, which is www.lawmemorial.org. And then if they want to go to the museum, they can just click on a tab that will take them right there, and they'll see some of the artifacts that we have and a description of the museum that's in the works.
Okay, real quick, would you repeat the phone number again? It's 202 number?
202-737-3400, and the website is lawmemorial.org.
Outstanding. Our listeners need to go and support the memorial in every way they can. Give from your heart. They do great things honoring the fallen. They help us to never forget, and they help to make sure that those who have made the ultimate sacrifice get the respect and the honor that they deserve. Craig, thank you very much for being on the show with us today. I look forward to having you back sometime in the near future.
My pleasure, Frank. And by the way, October 16th, we have the first ever law enforcement ride and run to remember for those bicyclists and runners and walkers out there. So they can find information on our website about the ride and run to remember as well.
I take it that's a fundraiser event for the memorial, is it not?
It is, and it's much like the Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure, any of the many events that go on now to raise money for health charities and such. We've seen the success. We've seen the public awareness value of doing events where you bring citizens together with our law enforcement professionals, and that's what will happen on October 16th. Get the community
hey, Craig,
out with law enforcement.
I'm sorry, we're going to get cut off by the producer.
Go ahead.
Go to the memorial website, support this event. Thank you for your presence here today, Craig. Thank you to our listeners for listening to our show about women in law enforcement.
Thank you for being a part of Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Each week, Officer Radio